G'day, it's Daniel Harford. Welcome to the Best of the Breakfast Club on RSN 927. It was jam-packed. Check it out.
Hello, Adam White.
A very good morning to you, Daniel Harford. Game changer extraordinaire. We'll get to that shortly. But it is very exciting if you are a Brisbane fan when you just said then they're one game away from a grand final. And they are one win away from a grand final. They are one home win away from a grand final. They are one home win away from a home grand final.
One home win away from a home grand final. That's correct. That's right. That's correct.
And they haven't been beaten at the Gabba this year. Their three losses, the Lions, have been to Richmond, Hawthorn and Geelong. They've obviously beaten Richmond in a final since their loss to Richmond in round 10. And their other two losses, Hawthorn was round one at the MCG, and that was round one, and there was such a unique round of football. And the other one was round six against the Cats, where they were all over Geelong early. And then, for whatever reason, the Cats got themselves back into the game and came over the top of them in the second half. But it just shows that there's no real reason to suggest that the Lions shouldn't be the clear flag favourite when you look at it that way. Now, I know you can skew it and you can talk about other teams and why they should be favourites. Port Adelaide have been on top all year. But just that whole thing around two more Gabba wins and the Lions are premiers.
Yep. Yep.
It seems the easiest, most logical way.
Yes, if you try not to overcomplicate the theories
yes.
and the pathway, it seems to be the logical outcome. But obviously, footy's not played like that, so there's a hell of a lot more to it, of course. But yeah, if you just break it down and keep it really raw and simple, it seems like a pretty good opportunity for the Brisbane Lions, doesn't it? Mm.
And part of that sort of framing of Brisbane as the flag favourite is the fact that they beat Port Adelaide and they beat Port Adelaide by 6 goals at the Gabba. And they are, you know, going into the final series. Port Adelaide was the number one seed. So, yeah, we'll talk about that a little bit later on.
Having said that, form can't always be an indicator of future performance, as we know with the West Coast Collingwood situation, where West Coast won by 66 points during the home and away season and lost by a point in the final. So not always indicative of future performance, the history.
Yeah. Now, you're like a father that's just come home from hospital.
Father.
Yeah, I know. But it's like you've just had three or four new children come into your world.
Yes.
You were like a proud dad last night. It was the AFLW draft.
My word, it was.
Last evening, for those that were unaware. And you had that real proud look on your face. That cheeky grin, the dimples that you can't see because of the beard were coming through because you were the proud owner of a few more children.
Yeah, three more. Welcomed to the Blues last night, which was very exciting. Mimi Hill was our first pick in the draft last night. She's a beauty, Daisy Walker, and Winnie Lang from Sandringham Dragons in the under-18s of the NAB League competition. Very, very excited. Only three this year. It's a bit different for us, and for all the clubs last night, because it was a virtual draft. It was most unusual. It felt really odd, I must admit. The whole thing, you're making these big decisions and normally you're in the room with hundreds of people and all these players and their families and you see the immediate response and the raw emotion and you're able to catch up with them straight away and talk through all that sort of stuff, which is actually a great day. The men's draft for the boys and the boys' draft for the boys and the girls' draft for the girls, they're really cool days. They're great energy days and you feed a lot off the energy in the room more often than not because of how excited everyone is to finally get their spot and get their chance in the world of AFL, but the men's or the women's competition. And it was a bit different last night. We're all stuck around the boardroom at the Blues from our perspective, sending our tips down the line via Microsoft Teams. I thought we might have Zoomed, but we Microsoft Teamed. And you do it that way, and it sort of feels, you want to sort of high-five someone, but you're not allowed to because you can't touch anyone. You've got to have your mask on anyway. And B, there's no one really there to high five. So it was all a bit odd, but I think draft days are my favourite day of the year for the girls. It's a really cool energy day. So I really enjoyed it. But yeah, Mimi Hill, Daisy Walker and Winnie Lang will be wearing navy next year, which we're very, very excited about. We think we're going to be around the mark. So those young women get a chance to be a part of something pretty cool, I think, which is great. You'll be so pleased, though, because the number one draft pick is a Fitzroy Junior Football Club player, Ellie McKenzie, who went to the Tigers. Just the inner city club there, the Fitzroy Junior Footy Club, which is a massive club out there at Edinburgh Gardens. She's a star, Ellie, and she'll be a name you'll be listening to and watching for a long, long time. She's a beauty.
So, a couple of questions. What was it like to be back inside an AFLW footy club, because you haven't left your house for 3 months, maybe even a bit longer than that now. But just to get back to some sort of normalcy in one of your other roles in life, how did that feel?
It was nice to get out of the house. It was lovely. It was nice to see different people in the flesh. Something about seeing people in the flesh, Whitey. It's quite nice. It was good. It was actually, I really needed to be somewhere else and get into that phase. I think we're all at that phase where something different and something normal, as you say, is what we're all craving at the moment. So that did seem to be a bit normal. Even the drive there was odd. I didn't quite feel right driving that far and driving back to work.
Yeah, I had that issue last week. Did you feel like? There's going to be police cars everywhere and you're going to be pulled over at any moment and all that sort of stuff, or?
No, I didn't feel... I was looking for them. I must admit, I was looking for a couple just floating around.
Yeah.
I didn't think there would be, but I was looking for them. Look, there was a lot of cars on the road yesterday. I left about midday.
Yes.
And there's a lot of cars on the road. But, it was nice to be back doing what I would normally be doing around about this time of year and with other people. That was pretty cool. But it was good. It was good.
Yeah, okay. So that's the first part of it.
Ockham Park is looking magnificent. It is looking absolutely pristine, the surface. There's been no one on it for 6 months.
I was going to say, there's no excuse. And then the second part of it is, how have you gone in drafting these young women when they haven't played any football in recent times? So there's been no VFLW competition. There's been no real underage football played at any point, really.
Yeah.
I mean, does it give you less confidence, or does it actually give you more confidence that with the picks you had later in the draft that you go, geez, we've known these girls for 2 or 3 years. I can't believe they got through to that point because of the lack of exposed form. I mean, how did you feel you knew the girls as much as perhaps what you would have otherwise?
Yeah, no. Well, from a football sense, you don't. That's just the short of it. So you need to be fully across that and fully aware that that's just the reality of the situation. And the boys will go through the same thing at the end of the year in the men's competition, men's draft. So you just need to understand that and deal with that initially and say, right, what do we know about these players? Because the good players have been in the system for a couple of years more often than not, and most of them would have played national championships last season as underages anyway, or certainly in the pathway programs, the AFLW Academy in the last couple of years anyway. So you got access to all their information through that, all the games through that. They played two or three games, depending on which teams played at the start of the NAB League season this year. So there's a little small sample size, as the mighty Glenn Luff, or former champion data superstar, would say. So you know enough, and then it's about picking players from our perspective that you can see have grown in that time, and then the scope and potential to be better again through a well resourced and semi professional program. So we're fully aware that it's not normal, not the same as it was or has been in previous years, but you know enough, and your footy eye, our list manager's been in footy for a long, long time. And recruiting and pathway programs, so you know enough about what these players have done and these type of players have done in previous generations to develop and the impact they have on your footy club. So it's different, and you need to get your head around the fact that you don't know them as well as you would love to, but you know enough to be able to say, we've got something to work with here, and that's the way you go about it. Depending on where you sit in the draft, that's the way you go about it. Like the Western Bulldogs had 3 picks in the top 10 yesterday in the Victorian draft. And got some absolute beauties. So if you know, earlier is obviously much easier, the exposed form and the better players earlier were much easier. But outside of that, you're looking for your recruiters and list managers to have footy nous and understand how development works and backing them in.
So talking about the fact that the Bulldogs had three picks early, there's every chance now that Essendon in the AFLW, not the AFLW, in the AFL, some will say the AFLM, not me, that
don't
Essendon may have... Jesus, Adam! I said Jesus. G-E-E-Z-E-Z-S.
Is that what you said?
Yes, I did.
Do you have to spell it every time you say it?
Get it out. No, well, yes, because I get in trouble for people in my house saying I'm saying something that I'm not saying. Okay, let's go again.
Are you going to get away with it, you reckon?
Well, I'm a bit emotional, all right, because Adam Saad's going to Carlton. Now, there is a text message that says Steve-O got it wrong.
Yes.
Told us Saad was going to stay. Now, I believe that Essendon certainly thought that Saad was going to stay about this time last week. And I think Essendon's a bit shocked this morning and last night with the news that Saad has chosen Carlton as the club he would like to play at for the next 5 years, which could leave Essendon with three picks inside the first 10 or 12 in the draft, depending on how it all plays out. What was your initial reaction to that news?
Well, I was actually, funnily enough, I was in the boardroom of the Carlton Football Club at the time the news came through. As I was scrolling through the socials during a bit of downtime in the afternoon yesterday. And I was a bit taken aback, and not from any inside information anywhere, but just from the conversations and the tone of the conversation that seemed to have turned, as you say, Whitey, that it seemed to have turned from, oh, he's Gonski, to, oh, no, you'll be right. He'll end up probably playing back at the Bombers again. So that was the tone. I just, because it's not something I involve myself in to get any great detail, all this trade speculation, because often it's just that. I was a bit taken aback, I must admit, but they were pretty pleased at Icon Park. The ones that were there that were pretty pleased about it. But I was a bit surprised, considering the tone of the conversation and the way that had changed. More often than not, when it changes to that degree, there's a reason for it. And perhaps there was, but there was a, and there might have been a bit of a backflip from Adam Saad, but it's a blow. It is a huge blow for the Bombers. If Joe
I think
goes, Adam goes.
Yeah. It's a blow for the Bombers for a couple of reasons. One is PR-wise. It's not playing out well for Essendon that Adam Saad would essentially say, I have no confidence in the direction of the football club, I'm leaving. Adam Saad's only been at Essendon for 3 years.
Yeah.
And in all 3 years, he finished top three in their best and fairest. So they're clearly using a really good player, but they're losing a role player as well. He plays a specific role, and he can play multiple roles, really. But whether it's his dash and dare and run and carry off half-back or his ability to beat an opponent one-on-one in a defensive mechanism... he's got a couple of really key attributes that are hard to find. But then when you pair that off with Connor McKenna not being at the football club either, Essendon's real point of difference, probably more in 2019 than 2020, of that run and dash off half back coming off two different flanks, they've got neither of those moving forward. So I think there's a couple of reasons why that's a real blow for Essendon. Now, what they do with whatever pick they get, I think is going to be really interesting now, because Essendon can go one of two ways. They can either trade those picks and bring in senior players and keep pushing for the now, or they can go for a renovation and use those picks. What they do, I don't know. But we saw what Fremantle and we've seen what Port Adelaide have been able to do when they've had multiple picks early, that you can actually bounce quite quickly, but you can actually change the narrative of your football club quite quickly when you bring in multiple picks, providing you get them right, which Port Adelaide did and which is what Fremantle did.
There's a few layers to this conversation, I reckon, and we'll touch on them with Jody Ralph a little bit later on as well, who probably know more of the ins and outs. But there's... The conversation needs to be... There really needs... I think there needs to be an internal look from Essendon, and we say, well, how is this happening? Why are we losing these players? What about the way we're doing business at the moment is giving these players a reason to have conversations elsewhere and to look outside of our club, which has for so long been a great strong, powerful club where you're a Bombers person, you stayed a Bombers person, and you achieved things along the way. Why is that not happening anymore? I think it's the most important conversation Essendon need to have themselves with themselves at the moment. It's not about what can we do with the draft picks or what do we want for these players. It's why is this happening? That's, I think,
no doubt.
Is the key.
No doubt. And I think, you know, whenever the word culture is questioned, I think that's a red flag. Now, sometimes it can be a disgruntled player who is not getting what he wants, either money-wise or the role he's playing, and maybe that has contributed to the situation with Adam Saad. But the problem with Adam Saad is the Adam Saad situation. He was seen as being such a popular member of the team, someone that is very hard to upset in a way, very loyal, very good, you know, good values and all those sorts of things. So for him to get upset to the point of requesting to leave the football club, I think that will jolt the club. And maybe long term it might actually be a good thing, because things that they haven't maybe addressed internally, they've now come to the surface. So I don't know. I mean, the hard part for Essendon is that they have gone through this transition from one coach to the other, and there seems to be a bit of resistance to what's happening internally. So we'll see what happens. I mean, look, Joe Danaher might stay, and then all of a sudden maybe the conversation changes again, but I reckon that's unlikely now.
Yeah, well, and gee whiz.
And I don't know either way. I don't think anyone knows either way with Joe, by the way.
Yeah, I'd be surprised if Joe stayed. Then again, I was surprised that Adam left, so there you go.
Yeah.
Who knows what's going to happen. Bottom under the Blues, they've created, talk about culture, they've created a perception, a culture where players seemingly are keen to go and try their hand at the Blues. So
yeah,
that's something they can be proud of, with the way that they've built their footy department in the last couple of years. David Teague and Brad Lloyd's come in and done a great job and creating a place, an environment where seemingly players want to go. Now, we know that there's some financial incentive for some of these players too, and that's fair enough. But you still, it's not easy to get players out of their comfort zone and out of their clubs, particularly if they've been there for quite some time. It's not as easy as it sounds. And if people talk about free agency and the like, opening the window. The window is open, but you've got to have a reason to jump out it. The Blues have given them a reason to do that. So I think it's really big tick for the footy club, the Blues.
Absolutely.
Now, I didn't bother asking Craig Gabriel about Brian because, I'm not sure that he's big into the Australian music scene these days. He's such a global phenomenon, such a global Rolodex, that the local one probably doesn't interest him these days. But he joins us to cover the French Open for us. Good morning, Craig.
Gentlemen, morning. Yeah, look, I Brian is a little bit before my time.
It's only 58. 59. I know you look, you're 25, possibly 30 these days, I'm not sure. But he's one of the greats of Australian net music and entertainment, is Brian Manning. So happy birthday to him. Now tell me, what's been happening overnight at Roland Garros?
It has been a full-on day, and it's still going. Look, we've had some amazing things happen over here today. There was a match that was put off from yesterday on today with two of the women, and that was to get into the quarterfinals. So Danielle Collins, who was a semi-finalist at the Australian Open a couple of years ago, she defeated Ons Jabeur, the 30th seed, 6-4, 6-4, 4-6, 6-4. But then the interesting one, Nadia Podoroska, she has stunned everybody with this run that she's had at the French Open, and she's upset the third seed, Elena Svitolina, probably the biggest upset of the tournament.
Wow.
When you consider that Podoroska, I don't know why I said ski before, but Podoroska was ranked 131. She was one down from her career high of 130, and here she is beaten the third seed, the world number five, Svitolina, 6-2, 6-4. And
wow,
it's the first time, yeah, absolutely, she played amazingly well. The first time at the French Open in history of the tournament that a player has reached the semi-finals from the qualifying round. She had to come through the qualifying. She's won 8 matches to this stage. Now, if you consider that you need to win 7 matches to win a major, she's gotten one more than that.
yeah.
So it is pretty amazing. But the match of the day, and probably, if not the match, one of the matches of the tournament, Diego Schwartzman has come back to beat Dominic Thiem. 7-6, 5-7, 6-7, 7-6, 6-2. just over 5 hours of the most gripping and incredible tennis. I've been describing it as a bruising battle that they had on court. You know, they were both standing and playing as well at the end as they did at the beginning of the tournament.
It was always going to be. I want to get back to the women shortly because I think there's an amazing story developing there. But just on that match you're talking about, it was always going to have the potential to be a bit of a brutal affair because of the nature of the way both of them play. But, I mean, we would have thought the team would have got through considering the fact that he won the US Open and he's got to the last two French Open finals. Did it all sort of catch up with Dominic, the amount of tennis he's played lately, or are we not giving enough credit for what Schwartzman's been able to do to have this breakthrough?
You have to give 100% credit to both guys. It wasn't as if one faded and the other one picked, you know, was on the ball or anything like that. Sure, Dominic said afterwards that, you know, he was pretty much saying he was running on the smell of an oily rag, but you would never really have known it. He was playing so amazingly well right through the end of the match. But credit to Schwartzman. I mean, he was remarkable. They were both remarkable. I mean, I think probably team confessed that if he was to win, he needed to win it in four sets. He was 2 points away from the match. And I'm just trying to think, did he have a match point? I don't know. I can't remember if he did, because there was so much happening in this encounter with such gripping tennis from both of them. Either of them, you know, it's a shame they both couldn't have won. But it was such incredible sportsmanship from team at the end. I mean, he was smiling. He was so happy for Diego because they're really good friends, the two of them. And he said, I'm so happy for him. I'm disappointed, very disappointed. But I'm so happy for him because he's never reached the semis of a major before, and he's also going to be in the top 10 for the first time. So he was full of praise for his friend, Schwartzman from Argentina. So it was a wonderfully staged match, incredible sportsmanship, played in such a wonderful spirit. So it was, I mean, for all those clowns who are detractors of five-setters, take a look at this match.
We're focusing on the BMW PGA Championship at Wentworth, which is your favourite, I believe, of the European golf courses that we see on the European Tour. And Scotty Henn's going to be there with the flag flying for the Aussies and, of course, himself. He joins us on the Breakfast Club. Scotty, good morning.
Hello, boys.
Great to have you with us. Firstly, did you thaw out from Saturday at the Scottish Open? Because that was quite a remarkable set of circumstances and conditions that everyone was playing in.
Yeah, it's pretty brutal. you guys are used to the cold, but I'm a bit of a fan with the golf. I mean, I don't like playing golf in anything under 25 degrees.
So how different is it, though, when you get those sort of days, just while we're there, how different is it? How much difference does it make to your game?
Oh, well, a quick explanation. I missed the green. I went to try and chip and run for six on. I couldn't feel my hands, and I chipped it straight across the other side of the green. That's how it goes.
What about just in general, Scott, about what you've done in recent times? I mean, you played in the brutal conditions in the US Open. You know, on the other side of the world, you then come back, you're playing in brutal conditions in Ireland and then particularly Scotland. Does it do damage to your golf or to your swing, or can you're experienced enough to sort of weather all of that?
Well, when you say brutal, I don't know if you mean mentally or physically, because the 84 I had on Friday at the US Open was mentally brutal. Physically, the cold was brutal when we went back to Ireland. It was 2 degrees the other day, so I've been punished both ways.
Yeah, and that was what I was going to... It was probably more mental about sort of convincing yourself that despite the conditions that you're having to endure, that your golf's still good, I guess, because I would imagine it would be testing your confidence, those sorts of different conditions.
Yeah, horses for courses, mate. You know, sometimes golf courses set up better for you than other times the weather sets up better for you, and some guys are much better at grinding it out when it's cold and windy, and other guys like grinding it out when it's 45 degrees Celsius. You know, it's just one of those things. And if you grow up in the cold, then you obviously don't mind it. But if you grow up like in Queensland or you live in Florida or something, you find it a little bit more difficult to sort of handle it.
Yeah, that's fair. That's fair.
And this week you go from we got the Irish Open, we had a tie for 11th, and just midfield set in the Scottish Open on the weekend for the Aussies. But this week you're off to Wentworth Golf Club, and Whitey keeps telling me this is the most beautiful golf club, and he loves this more than anyone else. When you get to the calendar at the start of the year, do you circle this one and say, I really want to make sure I'm playing at the BMW PGA Championship because of this golf course?
Oh, for sure, and one of the more prestigious titles to win, obviously, in Europe. But the golf course is great. It's got better and better each year. Now they've got sub-air in the greens, and someone was trying to tell me they had like 80 mil of rain here in a couple of days, which is obviously quite a fair bit, but the greens don't even really look like it. They just had the sub-air pumping. The coverage of grass is fantastic. Fairways are a little sort of softish, so they'll be doing a lift clean in place because we've got more weather coming in, apparently. But man, the golf course is looking great. It's totally different from how we played earlier in the year. The wind's a different direction, and the ball's not running out down the fairway, so it's playing quite long.
I wanted to ask you about that because usually this tournament's played in May. It changed a little bit last year, but definitely this year because of Corona, it's going later again. How much extra work do you have to do in preparation to this because you'll be playing from different spots in different conditions, all that sort of thing?
Oh, it's just more like I went and played 18 today and 18 holes, and obviously there's a few holes where you used to hit a 4-iron or a 2-iron off a tee. Now you can actually take a driver because the ball won't run out in through the corner or won't run out into the water. So just a matter of trying to judge where you can take a bit more club and be a bit more aggressive because the ball's not running as much and the rough isn't quite as long, but still it's quite cool and windy, which is not usually what we get. That's a big difference.
And just on in the build-up to these big events, you talk about being one of the most prestigious titles to win on the European Tour and to play in on the Tour. With what's happening with the format and the way you have to prepare for it and isolate and all that sort of stuff and no crowds, how different is it, the experience of these big tournaments? Does it make it easier to play in or more difficult, do you think?
We're all happy we're playing golf. We're just all a little bit frustrated that we're sort of locked in the circle of the isolation bubble for the Tour, and we can only sit down and have breakfast, lunch and dinner with the same people day in, day out. You've only got three other people you can associate with, and other than that, you can't sit down and have dinner with anybody else. So it becomes a bit of a chore week in, week out. It's you spend more time with your caddy and that than you do with your missus and the rest of your family members. So, you know, you got to have a good relationship with the guys you're hanging around with, and otherwise you feel like you're just going nuts, mate. It's like Groundhog Day out here.
Not only is she the world's greatest ever netballer, she's now officially the world's greatest ever assistant coach of a netball team because she has single-handedly, from distance, if you don't mind, from afar, guided the Melbourne Vixens through to the Super Netball Grand Final. And, oh boy, I was puffy in the flanks on the weekend when I was doing some exercise. She's not puffy in the flanks. She is ready to go with these girls for a Grand Final tilt. Sherelle, good morning.
Good morning. Yes, obviously my hands are all over this for sure from a distance, from an
That's
absolute
right.
distance. Sadly, I feeling a little bit puffy in the flanks too, so I'm on your side of the fence with that. But however, the Vixens girls are not. They're good. They're just having a little rest for that extra week, which I guess in a way will be one of the challenges of this final series. You know, I know we've extended out to a week, which was an adjustment from the almost continuous games of two games a week, and then now suddenly there's the 2 week break. So again, another little adjustment that they have to get their heads around.
Yeah, we spoke to Lizzie Watson about that on Monday, about how to attack that, not only physically but just mentally as well, because you've had that stimulation, the players have had that stimulation all the way through, Sherelle, and all of a sudden that sort of dissipates for a little while, and having to re-energise and get that back up for Grand Final week is going to be, not a challenge, but just a bit different.
Well, a bit different, and you're right. It's not a challenge, I guess, because it's a Grand Final. I mean, if you can't get yourself up for that, there's something happening, but... Yeah, but it's that time that they'll have and how they spend that time. For some people, you know, the constancy of it is quite good because they don't have a lot of time to get in their own heads and, you know, obviously the nerves of a grand final can really take some of your nervous energy if it plays too much on your mind. So, you know, that is just one of the challenges of getting straight through. Of course, there's a huge benefit too, because we've got, you know, Kate Maloney left the court in the semi with a little ankle roll, so she's got a bit of extra time. Lizzie, as you said, has got that ankle that she's been dealing with. So, you know, there's a couple of our players who, you know, will benefit from just a little bit of a rest too.
How are you feeling? Because you are central to the Vixens in a coaching sense, but you're not up with them. So you're sort of watching it on TV. It's while you're on the couch, it's unfolding. I don't know whether you've got an exercise book or a clipboard or something as you're sort of going through the game. But do you feel connected to it, or do you feel a bit weird?
I do feel connected. Of course I feel connected, but there is certainly a disconnect with what they're doing as well. And of course there is when you've got that distance with you. So I'm still talking to particularly the goalers every week or before every game, and the coaches quite a bit. So I'm still really involved in the work that I'm doing with the team, but it is weird. And, you know, I've been talking to some of the other staff that are back here in Melbourne about how we might be able to smuggle ourselves across the border to get up there for the game.
So just a bit further on that, I wonder sometimes whether it can be an advantage that you're not in that bubble. And what I mean by the bubble is not being up in Queensland, but a way, having a bit better perspective that you're not involved in every single discussion. Because sometimes inside any sporting team, you can have an inflated view or an unrealistic view of how it's all unfolding, whereas you've got perhaps a bit better perspective because you're outside. Does that kind of make sense?
Yeah, it does. And I think that's possibly true. You know, you get removed from all the emotion that's probably sat around being in the hub. I mean, we spoke to a lot of athletes who have experienced that. And, you know, some of them are just thinking it's really easy and cruisy, and others, you know, there's some challenges. And I think probably with the Vixens, it sat somewhere in between that, but they've had a pretty good experience. But it's tough being away and in a group like that for so long. So, yeah, having someone that is a bit removed from that can certainly help a little bit, I think. And, you know, as you say, just give it a little bit of a different perspective that hasn't, you know, been all in that environment.
Well, let's get to Johnny Ralph. He's still with us, which is great news for everyone, because he's one of the great newsbreakers in the world of Australian rules football, and he's got all the latest on what's happening in the trade period and the conversations within Sherelle, and there's a bit happening in the last little while as well. Johnny Ralph from the Herald Sun, The Buzz, good morning to you.
Hello, gentlemen. Hello, Sherelle. What a great day to be a Carlton fan. You just stocked up for the AFLW draft, and you got a men's list that I think will want for nothing if they can get a deal done with Essendon. And that's a big if sometimes when Adrian Dodoro is involved. But, yeah, people just want to keep coming to the Carlton Football Club, Daniel.
Well, Sherelle's smiling. She's a blue bagger from way back, so she's very happy about it. I'm not too depressed either, I must admit. But why? Why, John? Why has this happened? Because all the conversation seemingly had turned for Adam Saad to be staying at the Bombers. What's happened?
Well, I think he just was frustrated with the whole journey throughout the season. I mean, the hub life for a lot of people hasn't suited them. You know, as far back as July when we were writing about his story and the financials, you know, there was a chance for Essendon to secure him. I think the expression from Essendon was, we don't pay that much for back pocket. And then it's just morphed into more of a discussion about the culture of the football club, the direction of the football club, and his role in it. And look, you know, Josh Fraser was quite strong on Twitter last night. He said, you know, you're a defender, you play exactly where the coach wants you to play. But there clearly is something about the communication methods from Ben Rutten, the fact that he was clearly wanted to play as a more creative type. Now, he's a lockdown defender. You know, he's always been able to do both. But there is something in the way in which they have put that message to him that makes him think, no, that's not what I want to do. And I think every player plays well when they've got a really specific task. They understand. So clearly, there is something in that communication that he's not au fait for him. As a result, he's going to be able to play that more creative role off half back at Carlton. They've already got Tom Williamson. He's got a booming left foot, but played a lot of really, really strong lockdown roles. We know that Lockie Plowman can play on that mid-sized player as well. And so, if you've got him, Nick Newman coming back in from his injuries, and then Sam Doherty, it is a mighty fine mid-sized key defence back line before you bring in the key defenders like, of course, Jones and Caleb Marchbank coming back from his injury, and of course Jacob Wiedering as well.
Yeah.
And so obviously the sense from Adam is that he will be able to play that more free role at Carlton. Do you think that that's just more of a sense of what people are getting, looking from the outside at Carlton, how they play their game, or is that real discussions that have gone through with him?
I think you tell a player anything you want if you can get him across the line. I think he's almost the best of that size, isn't he? I mean, there are interceptors who are better. There are attacking players like Lockie Whitfield who probably have more bounce. But I think he's that perfect. He's that Braden Maynard combination, the guy who can lock away his opponent and then bounces with not only feet, but also with just charging through the lines with his pace as well. And so, I think they very much have a hole for him there where they already have those lockdown players. So, I mean, it makes perfect sense for them. But, yeah, I mean, if you're going to offer him 5 years at $650,000, they very much need that attacking player. Of course, they already have Williams to play as a midfielder. That's going to surprise a few people who think that he might not have the tank to do that. But to think that they can absolutely fill two of those three holes, they'd love a Eddie Betts at 25. They'd love a Tom Papley. Right now they've created someone like someone to be able to play in that role as a Fisher. So I just think for a Carlton Football Club that what he's 2 weeks on from round 18, I just think it's an absolutely magnificent trade period. Now, you're going to have to give up pick seven in some ways. Now, does that mean that you have to give back a second rounder or get back a second rounder? I just think if you're a Carlton Football Club that has got Jack Martin in for a pre-season pick, which is basically worthless, that has got a free agent in Zach Williams, and then you just have to pay the price for pick seven for this guy, I just think that's an absolute success, even if it's potentially overs on some of the other players that might have been traded in recent years.
And I think, Ralphie, you make a good point that when it comes to Zach Williams, they're not giving up anything because they're getting him as a free agent. So it's not like they have to give up multiple first-round picks across multiple years to get both Williams and Saad in the door. From an Essendon perspective, it's going to jolt them because, in a way, now I know it's only one player, but it's not a vote of confidence in the new coaching setup with Ben Rutten to officially take over this year. I just wonder how they're going to handle that, Essendon.
Yeah, and I think, Whitey, the problem is going to be the potential snowball effect. I know that Adam was really worried about what Joe Danaher was going to do. I think Adam probably felt like Joe was going to leave. But, with Adam leaving now, does Joe say, well, that's the tipping point, or has he already made that decision? I think the only thing it might do is actually help Orazio Fantasia to think, where is my role? He did play in those four or five games as a halfback, so maybe he stays. But, I think the general expectation is that he leaves as well. And Connor McKenna did not play great football this year. But two or three years ago, he was a splashing halfback. So you lose four players who are absolutely in that 23 to 28 window. They're the kind of players that are the tipping point between you winning a premiership and not. And so then maybe you look at the other players. We know that Michael Hurley and Hooker and others are disgruntled as well. So I think that Adrian Dodora would be trying really hard to lock down those players. The only thing that I can see him doing is you bring in a Ben Brown for a later selection and you just go back to the draft. I mean, if it is pick six, pick seven for him and also a compensation pick of pick eight, that's exactly what Fremantle did. They got Young, they got Caleb Sarong, they got Liam Henry, and all of those players look like 200-game players of the future. I mean, we have seen with so often in the draft in recent years, you can bring plug-and-play players in from the draft of previous year. Now, maybe that's the road that Essendon has to go down, and clearly they have to fix their cultural issues because right now there are so many players that are just not happy at Essendon.
So the question needs to be asked on the back of that, Ralphie. Are they having that introspective look at why this is happening? Don't worry about how the mechanism is of getting them out or what they get in return, but why has this got to this point where players seemingly want out?
Yeah, it's a great point. I don't have the answers. I'm sure that Xavier Campbell would be having all of those kind of discussions right now, and so would Dan Richardson too. I just think the hub life as well has heightened so many of these issues. So many clubs, you call it North Melbourne, you call it Harley Bunnell and his explosion when he was 72 hours away from winning a contract. It's been such a turbulent time for so many people. And I think, the ability normally to get away and have some relief, to play a game of golf or have a couple of cheeky pots down at your local, all those things that might have just, cooled off some of that tension across so many clubs, I think they have not been there. And so, potentially time will heal some of those wounds. I think that Ben Rutten, as player managers said to me, it's all very well to whack your players. It's all very well to make really tough decisions, but you have to cuddle them first. You have to establish that relationship. And we've seen that, you know, personified through Chris Fagan, you know, in the last couple of years. I don't think he's done that. I think he's been premature. And so, you know, it's not to say that he won't have that trust or find that trust with his players. I just don't think he had it yet. And I just keep thinking to myself that the Bell Chambers decision was a coaching decision not to give him a farewell. If I'm Dan Richardson or Xavier Campbell, I have to intervene there. I have to know that my 20 years in football shows me that this player needs to get a farewell game. That's only one of those examples, and yet it's just been one of the I would say, many missteps that right now are adding up to a frustrated playing group.
The reality is, Adam, he's out of contract. He's not a free agent. So Essendon aren't going to make this easy. How likely is it that it will happen? Are you sure that this will happen?
Well, we've got 5 days, 5 weeks and 2 days for the trade period. I think the misfire of last year with Tom Papley means that Carlton will be prepared to accept to offer more. You know, pick 7 is a mighty fine player, you know, when you go to the draft. But as I said, I mean, this is a guy who sets up your entire game plan. He's a durable player who's won game in 3 years. He's 26. So you think that, like Basher Hawley, you know, he's probably going to give you 7 or 8 exceptional seasons. So I would feel like most Carlton fans would say, OK, we'll take a second rounder back from Essendon. We'll give up our pick 7. Now, Essendon hasn't got a second rounder right now, but if it is that they get a pick back for Razia and Fantasia later on, I just think there are enough ways these days to try and sweeten deals. And you know, and if it is that they lose pick 7 and they get in, you know, multiple players, with players like Charlie Kerno coming back, also Caleb Barch back from his injury, and with, you know, young ruckman like Tom DeConey, you know, as the stars of the future, I just think the sum of those parts of that trade, something that will allow Carlton to get it done with pick 7.
I'm going to ask this to you, Daniel.
Yes.
Can you flush a playing group out? And what I mean by that is that with Adam Sard leaving, and you know, we've heard the reports as to why he wants to leave. There is still hesitation around Joe Danaher, and this has been dragging on far too long, in my view, that we've got a playing group almost dictating terms on the future of the direction of a club. Does the footy club Essendon have to get on the front foot and say, right, if you want out, go. We're drawing a line in the sand here and saying, you're either with us or you're not, because we'll go another direction and we'll bring in new players that want to be at the football club. If there's any hesitation, go and play somewhere else. Can you do that in this day and age, or do you have to work with the personalities and the players you've got and try and keep them on side in this day and age with real sort of, you know, sensitive young individuals?
Yeah, it's a good question, I reckon. It's a delicate balance. The club needs to control the destiny and the direction of it. Players, obviously, a critical component of that. But your sentiment of, if you want to be here, fantastic, if you don't, well, that's cool. I still think is the best sentiment to have as a footy club. Because the problems you get from players who stay for the wrong reasons, and what that breeds into your group and filters into your group, can be so toxic and be so bad for what you are trying to build that you, while they might be really good players, the bigger picture is always a worse picture because of their investment in your culture and their investment in your program. I reckon they should, I must admit, the Bombers, say, if you're happy, that's fantastic. No dramas. Off you go. The problem is, from the Bombers' perspective, Ralphie, and I'll get your take on this too, the problem is they've been building for now. And if all of a sudden it gets to the point where Sard goes, Fantasia goes, McKenna's gone, and Danaher goes, you're building again. You're not starting from scratch, but you're starting from a fair way back from where you thought you'd be and your members and your fans thought you'd be. So that sell, from a PR perspective for your businesses, takes a really big hit, Ralph. And that wouldn't be too appreciated by the Essendon faithful, I wouldn't have thought.
No, and be careful what you wish for and be careful what you allow. If you say to those Essendon players, guys, you want to move on, that's fair enough. Well, then someone like Zach Merritt sticks his hand up. What do you do then? A guy that won the best and fairest last year and was second this year. And so isn't it bizarre? It's not about premiership success. It's about hope, but it's about building the expectation that you'll be a better club and the vision for it. But Carlton hasn't played finals since 2011. I mean, Carlton may very well not play finals next year, and yet they have been able to build a narrative that we have got a coach who is on board, a successful football club, and a team that's going somewhere. I mean, you know, Essendon, you know, should be that club. and yet players aren't happy and players don't see that there is a future there. I mean, everyone comes off a year in which things go terribly. You know, we saw it with Richmond in 2016, yet they could keep their list together. And it doesn't seem right now, for myriad reasons, that Essendon's been able to do that.
Simon Brookhouse, let's get an update on his situation at the Tasmanian Jack Jumpers. They are the new team, the 10th team in the NBL, coming in 21-22, the season 21-22. And, of course, a big announcement last week with the naming of the team. And there's been a fair response as well. Simon, good morning.
Good morning. How are you?
We are very well, thank you. The Jack Jumpers, it got a lot of people talking. Were you expecting such a conversation starter when you decided on the name?
Oh, look, I think we did, because it's very different. And it's sort of different things tend to polarise people initially until they come to understand what they may mean and what they mean to Tasmania particularly. So it was probably... we probably got more of a reaction across the whole country than we expected, but we certainly got a very positive reaction here in Tasmania, which is important.
Well, that was the thing that we took out of it, I think, Simon, was it wasn't just basketball fans or Tasmanian basketball fans, it was Australian sporting fans who seemingly engaged us fairly heavily in the conversation, which is great for your branding, for your awareness.
Yeah, look, it absolutely is. And it's funny, I've said it a couple of times, it's quite a unique name, obviously, but it's a lot like Tasmania. When you come here, you never forget it. And I think once you hear the Jack Jumpers or you see a Jack Jumper, you never forget them. So it is a conversation starter, which is what we want.
Now, I sort of know the answer to this, but I'll ask it anyway. Was it done intentionally to have a name that would spark a lot of conversation, or did it just happen? Because it was a vote, and you had no control in that.
Yeah, look, I think it wasn't done intentionally to spark conversation, but we certainly thought once we landed on the name that it would. It was done more to be synonymous with Tasmania and be what we want the club to about, and be something that we can bring to life. A lot of names before us we didn't want to use. We wanted something to be new for the future, and we certainly wanted something kids and families actually sort of locked into and believed in, and we've seen that so far with our membership sales early on. So the character, the Jack Jumper himself, is that sort of superhero Marvel type character, which is really the kids have really embraced down here, which is fantastic.
Well, I was going to ask you about that, Simon, the members and how you've been received already. I think you're up over 1,000 members saying that they'll come on board, which is amazing so far out and after really just announcing that what the name will be.
Yeah, look, so it's very exciting. I mean, we didn't expect that sort of outpouring of support initially. We were quite, quite joyed by it, I guess, to get over 1,000 in the first sort of 24 to 48 hours. And we're climbing up 1,500 at the moment. And to be honest, we really haven't started a push for our membership drive. We start that this week, and people are buying a foundation membership or a supporter pack, really. There's no seats, there's no games, but they're showing their support, and anyone can around the country. We've had people join up from all around Australia and overseas, and obviously a number in Tasmania. But if anyone's interested, they can go to the website, jackjumpers.com.au, and sign up and support. And there's some great merchandise that comes with that membership, and then you get a right to be one of the first full members and go through the renovations of the DEC and pick a seat if that's what you want to do.
Well, it does really show just the appetite that Tasmanians have for sport and to have those elite sporting teams down there, doesn't it? I know we've seen the AFL kind of explore playing some of their games down there through a couple of clubs, but this is something that Tasmania can own and love. And so for me, that reaction's not surprising.
Yeah, look, and this is where you have to respect the NBL's decision to come down here and give Tasmania the team that will play in a national competition and be seen on a global scale. I think that they're yearning for that, but they've had obviously North Melbourne and Hawthorn come down and a taste of that. You've heard they've wanted an AFL team for a long time, but the NBL's taken the risk of coming down here, and the support's been there, and I think that it from now on will be onwards and upwards, and it will be, from a sport perspective, it'll be the biggest show in town down here, and we're very confident, being a good, proud basketball state, that people will get behind it to support.
So what's the next big thing for you as CEO? What's your priority? Because obviously it's still a little while away until you start playing games. You're not part of next season, but part of next year's season, if that makes sense. There's still one in the middle. What are you looking at doing now to keep this momentum going? Because I would argue that there's genuine momentum building with what you've been able to achieve in a very short period of time.
Look, I think for us, 12 months might seem a long time, but it'll go very quickly. So we've got some really key decisions to make in between now and probably 2 months' time in terms of trying to find a coach. Now, we may not be able to announce that because of contractual arrangements, but we're certainly on the hunt for a coach, and then we start building assistant coaches and build our community programs that are really important to us. Well, one of our mandates is not just about the NBL, it's to assist Basketball Tasmania to grow the sport. We want basketball to be the number one sport in Tasmania, and through our community channels and what we'll be able to do in schools and various other areas of the community, we should be able to do that. So that'll keep the momentum going, keep the brand out there. But then, you know, on top of that, I've got to form an off-court staff. We've only got 5 appointments at the moment, but a few more to come. So there's that, and then there's players. You know, at the moment, it's embargoed around talking to contracted NBL players because of the rules that are in place, but there's certainly the opportunity to look who may be in Europe or who may be in the US or even Asia, New Zealand, who might want to come home. So we'll start scouring the world for those sort of marquee players who, ironically, maybe because of COVID, actually want to come back to Australia and be here in what we see as a safer environment. We've had a bit of feedback that there are some players out there wanting to do that.
It was our first 4-day turnaround. We'd never done one of those before. I think Richmond had 6 days. So we felt reasonably confident coming in tonight that we could perhaps reverse what happened. We certainly, you know, every time you play a team, you learn a little bit more about them, and then there were some things that we picked up that I think we did a good job on tonight and took away from them. So it was worth it from that perspective.
It was worth it, said Chris Fagan. That was post-game after the win over the Tigers last Friday night. Now they've earned themselves a right to have a bit of a freshen-up, a bit of a chill-out for a week and get ready for a home prelim in a week's time. Dan McStay was a part of the team that's doing great things in season 2020. And he joins us on the line on the Breakfast Club this morning. Good morning, Dan.
Good morning, guys. Thanks so much for having me.
Good on you, buddy. Nice to have you with us. It's nice to be able to talk about the Brisbane Lions into a prelim on the back of last season and the challenge, of course, of Richmond last week. It was a fantastic performance. We heard Chris Fagan talking about the confidence you gained, even though you lost the initial home and away round. What sort of confidence did you have coming into that game?
Yeah, I think it went all the way back to the finals previous year. We were obviously a young team that hadn't had much finals experience. So we learned a lot from those games, the intensity and how hard you got to play. And obviously playing against Richmond twice as well. And then during this year, we played them again. So we knew that how they wanted to play, and we felt like we went in with a game plan that would be able to marry up against them. And, we were able to execute it, which was nice, and we were able to kick our goals, which is something that we probably didn't do earlier in the season. So, I think they were the main things.
Yeah, that's very helpful when you're kicking through the big sticks. I've worked out through watching and playing for many, many years, Dan. Just on the physicality, one of the things that I noticed, and we discussed on Monday and upon reflection of the game, was that you didn't let Richmond bully you physically, which they try and intimidate at times, the Tigers, and it can be quite intimidating because they're such a powerful, overwhelming force at times. But you didn't allow that. How much of the physical presence was spoken about in the build-up to the game?
Yeah, absolutely. It's probably one of the biggest mind games for us was we knew that that's what they wanted to do. They've had their runs over us for many years now, and we knew we had to put a line in the sand and you know, try and fight back and show them that we're here to play and we're here to try and win. So that's what we did.
What's it like for you, Daniel? I mean, you've been around the Lions for a while now. I mean, you were playing footy when you weren't winning too many games as a forward, and now you're in a situation where your team's flying and you're on the end of some pretty good footy. I mean, how different is it for you going to work every day?
Yeah, it's massive. I was talking to Steph Martin about this pretty much straight after the game. He was at the club a bit before me when things were pretty dire, and we were talking about how special the wins are now for us, probably more so than some of the guys that have just kind of walked into the club. So we've been through some tough times, but we needed to go through that to kind of see how successful we could be and how much the culture needed to change. And now we're really reaping the rewards of that. So it's been, it's been massive.
And that was what I was going to ask you. Do you think that helps now that you not so much have more respect for the game, but because you've been there when it's been tough and now you're having success, that you don't take it for granted and you want to make the most of any opportunity you get?
Yeah, of course. We always talk about not being content with where we are and always trying to improve and always looking for ways that we can get better. So, off the back of probably those early days and Zorks, and there's been a few guys that have been through it as well. So some of our best leaders are the ones that have been through it. So they're the strongest ones in trying to make sure that we are not going backwards and we are trying to create something special. So, yeah.
So, Dan, the obvious one is to say, oh, well, Chris Fagan made all the difference and, he's been the mastermind around it all. But I'm interested in your view on some of the other reasons why you think it changed, moments or people coming to the football club. Because it has been a very dramatic rise, the footy club, over the last couple of years.
Yeah, I think it's definitely key personnel that have come into the club. The appointments of David Noble and Fags are obviously the pillars, but also the characters that we got in as players. You bring in guys like Lachie Neal and Charlie Cameron and these sort of guys, Luke Hodge, Grant Birchall. They're great people to have around the club, but they're great leaders and they've really drive to bring the club to a better position. So it's been massive on their parts as well as it has been on Fags and Nobes. So yeah.
How big a part of this season is the fact that you've been able to just hang out at home for most of the year? And we've talked about it from a Victorian perspective or interstate perspective, where a lot of the teams are obviously in hubs and travelling from their hubs to games interstate. You guys effectively have played most of the year at home, and Collingwood, Richmond, Hawthorn, all those teams that have had really successful seasons in the last decade have had the MCG as a factor where they play 13, 14, 15, 16, 17 games at the MCG. You've had that look this year at the Gabba, and you've been able to stay home while you're doing it. How big a benefit is it?
Yeah, it was obviously pretty huge for us, but at the same time, a lot of the time the fixture wasn't out, so we didn't know that we had these home games coming up or anything. Yeah. So we just had to take one week at a time, and we knew, like, we still had a hub down in Sydney for a period of time. We played a lot of games at Metricon as well to try and even out the season. So we played like a lot of games at home, but we still had to prepare every game as if we didn't know what was coming next. So it was just beneficial for us this year that it has worked out that way. But we don't take that for granted. We know we've still got to perform, and we don't use the Gabba as our outlet. Like, we can't just assume that we're going to win. We've still got to make sure we rock up every game and are ready to go, and because teams are going to start trying to hunt us down at the Gabba.
I feel like we got our second wind a bit because we did sort of plateau a little bit there, and I think we're sort of running back on top of the ground. Having Dan back in the team really helps our midfield, and Sinclair's been a good player for us with his fast feet and his ability to run at the game as well. And who knows, we might get Battle back next week as well, which would be a real plus for us as well.
That's the plus, said Brett Ratten after the game against the Western Bulldogs, where they were to the good of the Dogs by 3 points and through to a semi-final at Richmond on Friday night. It's going to be a very interesting affair. Jack Loney, I'm sure, is very excited about that. The security forward, he joins us on the line. Good morning, Jack.
Good morning, guys. Thanks for having me.
Good on you, buddy. You are welcome anytime on this program, and I'm sure it's a pretty exciting week up there in the Saints hub at the moment. Just describe the vibe for us, if you can.
It's been very exciting. Following the win on the weekend, you got the bus down after that. It's been a good buzz up in territory at the moment, and we're really looking forward to taking on the Tigers this week.
The Noosa factor, the fact that you are a little bit further away from everyone else, now of course there's only a few teams left in hubs at the moment with the finals campaign, but the fact that you have your own little piece of Queensland, has that been a positive, do you think?
I think it probably has. I think we've been able to have the resort to ourselves, be pretty free in things we're allowed to do. I suppose I haven't really experienced being in a hub with another team, but it's been good for us to really gel as a together as a group, and a lot of the boys have really started to connect, and all the younger boys and all the older boys have really started to build together a good bond, and probably the hub has been the thing that's probably burned that together.
And I'm interested, Jack, in just the comments that Brett Ratton made before about getting that second win late in the season that has sort of propelled you into this situation where you're now into the second week of finals. How do you see that playing out? How do you agree with that, and how do you think it's happened?
I'd probably say I agree. I think there's probably a stage there where we're probably struggling a bit with our form and probably lacking confidence there. But I think in the second half of the year, we've been pretty good, and we're starting to try to get the right mix and a few players back now from injury that we had there. It's really helped us, and we're pretty much full strength, barring a few. I think we're in a good space heading into this week.
And the forward line, I mean, you've been there for a little while now as that sort of small forward, but now you've got Dan Butler down there as well, and we actually just received a text message from one of our listeners saying that, you know, you may have benefited from Dan being there as well, that there's a couple of small forwards to worry about now. What's it been like having Dan around the place?
It's been very good. I was lucky to play Dan in big country, under-18s, and a bit of a relationship there, but, yeah, he's been awesome. Since he's come to the club, he's brought a lot of knowledge, and he's definitely helped me with my game. It's been great to watch him and play alongside him this year. He's been in some unbelievable form, so hopefully he can keep that up and get a win against his old side this week.
Yeah, well, it's going to be a great build-up to that. But just going back to the game on the weekend, how nervous were you in the last 5 minutes when the Doggies were rampaging and it was getting pretty tight, Jack?
It was getting very tight. I was on the bench for probably the last 3 minutes, so I felt a bit hopeless out there. But, I think I was lucky enough to hold on. But our work in the second and third quarters were probably good enough to help us there. So, we definitely reviewed that last probably 5 minutes of the game on the weekend and what we can improve on, and hopefully that holds us in good stead.
That was the best of the Breakfast Club. If you want to hear the full interviews again, go straight to the website, rsn.net.au.